If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, many of us want to get our money working as hard as we do. And I wanted to make it as easy as the stock market, right? Where you're kind of set it and forget it, like that Ronco rotisserie oven from back in the day.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Sean is a full-time real estate investor and landlord who has spearheaded 75-plus deals ranging from value-add renovations to new construction. His focus at Simplified Properties is revitalizing fixer-upper shopping centers to maximize returns for friends and colleagues who invest alongside him. His portfolio includes retail, apartments, storage, single-family rentals, REITs, and a handful of volatile stocks picked up in March of 2020 for added excitement. Prior to becoming a strip mall enthusiast, he worked at Microsoft and EA Sports, selling Xbox ads to Hollywood and automakers. Proud alumni of the Foster School of Business at the University of Washington, with concentrations in marketing, technology, and sales. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Good to be here with you.
Man, it's great to have you on. I'm excited to really jump in today. You know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Okay. So I started in corporate America. I think like so many other folks, my parents taught me to go out there and get a good job. So I was grinding away at Microsoft and EA Sports for many years. And as I saved up a little bit of money, I got excited about real estate investing. So I kind of fumbled my way through my first rental accidentally turned flip. And then fast forward about a decade later, you know, I'm predominantly focused on fixer-upper commercial deals now. I'm hot on shopping centers at the moment in Arizona. A lot of lessons learned the hard way over that time. And I've done everything from rentals to flips to wholesale deals to turnkey out-of-state rental properties, apartment buildings now. So I've got a pretty good, well-rounded experience investing in real estate in all shapes and sizes and kind of through different parts of the country. It's about seven states now I've invested in.
That's impressive. I think you're the first person I've talked to that does, and how did you put it, a shopping center flip?
In a sense, right? Like a lot like a house flip, but just with an extra comma and more zeros behind it. So we'll find something that's banged up, it's rough, it's underperforming. Generally, I like buying, you know, the worst property in a good area. It was that way for houses. It's very much the same way for buildings, right? We can turn around just about any property. You could scrape it and rebuild it if you had to, but it's hard to fix a whole zip code or a whole corridor or a whole submarket when it comes to real estate.
Right. I'm really curious how did you get into that, one? And then how did you educate yourself? And then what was your first deal?
Good question. So I got into it just kind of organically through residential investing. In the kind of the beginning of my residential career, I sought out some coaches and mentors because I realized I didn't know all things that involved the field. You know, I kind of got stuck. After I had, you know, exhausted my personal reserves of money, I stopped because I didn't know how to do deals without money. But I learned that there's quite a few ways, right? Partnering and joint ventures and other people's money and raising debt, raising equity. So that really helped to like unlock a whole way to build a portfolio and a business beyond just someone's personal resources. And today I probably, you know, leverage that more than anything. There's not much that I do alone in this business, especially with bigger deals, right? When you're dealing with seven and eight figure deals, it's pretty commonplace to have multiple partners coming in. And I always want to have absolute experts doing what they do in the business. So I think finally, a friend kind of took me aside one day and said, "Hey man, you can do kind of the same thing that you're doing here with residential, but in the commercial platform. And instead of remodeling kitchens and carpet and paint, you know, we're going to go in there and we're going to lease up some vacancy, or we're going to boost the net operating income by either bumping rents or lower expenses." So that idea and that concept really resonated with me, and kind of a funny thing, right? It just made sense, but really it made dollars, right? Because you can make so much more money. And I realized, you know, at one point I was juggling like 15 single family flips simultaneously and the wheels were just coming off the bus. I felt like I was doing adult babysitting with my contractors. And I just made a life choice, right? That I would rather do fewer, bigger deals that were higher quality that I could focus all of my attention on. And it made more sense from a buy and hold standpoint, right? It's like, I'm flipping. And it's constantly just looking for the next deal. But, you know, with a shopping center, an apartment building or an office building, like, you know, we're probably making money along the way while we're increasing the cash flow even further on any of those assets. And so that really resonated with me, you know, coming from a guy who was, you know, paying out hard money loan payments every single month, you know, on millions of dollars of real estate. This just seemed like a better risk to reward ratio. And as I understood some of the tax advantages a little bit more, I was like, this is just a no brainer. Like, I think if I knew now what I knew back then, I might've just bypassed residential and just got right into commercial. That being said, you know, a lot of my old partners came with me to commercial. I think having a resume helped to make that leap. So there was a lot of things that I think made my journey a little bit smoother and a little bit easier, working with contractors, finding deals, becoming a good marketer to get in front of motivated sellers. There's a lot of things there. So I went on for a minute. I think you asked about my first deal too. Do you want to pause there or dive right in?
No, let's hear that. Yeah, you're on a roll, man. I'm liking this. Carry on, please.
So my first commercial deal was a shopping center in Arizona. It was a bank-owned property. They'd foreclosed and it was an REO on their books. And I found it on LoopNet. It was listed for $2.6 million. I think I offensively offered $2 million. They countered me back at $2.2 million. We went under contract at $2.2 million. But ultimately, through some kind of due diligence, I was able to get a price reduction of about $250,000. And so I closed that deal for $1.95 million. Almost every lease in the whole shopping center was month to month. So that really was the assignment on that project, to go in and stabilize that, to refresh any of the tenants. I think we replaced one tenant with another one. And over the course of, you know, about 12 months doing that, that significantly bumped up the income of the property by almost 50%. And so the value of the asset, as you know, in commercial, ties pretty tightly to the net operating income. And so we went and turned around and sold that property about 18 months later for $3.5 million. So there was about a $1.3 million profit on that project in around 18 months. And for me and my friends and family who invested alongside me in that deal, it was an absolutely life-changing experience. It changed what we focus on today. It changed what we prioritize. It changed how we invest, what we look for. And so that really kind of set in motion the whole premise of commercial in Arizona, which is what I continue to focus on today. And we've done back-to-back-to-back deals like that now that are quite similar. So fixer-uppers, go in there, clean up the rent roll, make it lendable, and either sell it for a nice profit or refinance it and keep it in portfolio. Kind of like the Burr method, right? You've heard the buy it, renovate it, rent it, refinance. You can do that in commercial too.
Sure, sure you can. And the numbers, like you said early on, it's just, you know, an additional comma and more zeros. So you just got to be prepared for that. Otherwise, the method is basically the same. I mean, there's, you know, obviously there's nuance to all of it. It's not incredibly different. So shopping centers, now that's you know, falls under retail, right? And retail and shopping center, especially non-grocery store anchored retail, I think in 2020, you know, wasn't everybody's favorite child. So how did you guys weather through that? And kind of what has happened in that space since all this kind of madness unfolded?
Really good question. It was crazy. And, you know, a lot of my closest friends do shopping centers as well. And so I think everyone was just kind of like all hands on deck, a little bit of freaking out, a lot of problem solving. It was a lot of working with our tenants, you know, so we were helping people, you know, get kind of sorted out, particularly in like March, April, May, you know, there was mandatory lockdowns. And so, you know, got businesses who can't even be open making money. Understandably hard for them to make their rent. And so we were doing a lot of deferrals where we would push their rent out or, you know, amortize it back into the value of their lease. And some people, especially as they got their PPP money, were able to get caught up in May and June and kind of be made whole for what they missed. And that was the case pretty much across my portfolio. Not everyone was in such a good situation. So you know, there's a lot of landlords who are probably still, you know, dealing and recouping with that. you know, it's interesting about retail just kind of globally is, you know, it was already kind of taking a beating in the press, at least, you know, because of what's happening with Amazon and e-commerce. And, you know, it felt like every other week you were hearing about a big box kind of going under, and the Macy's and the Kohl's of the world. And, you know, a lot of those guys didn't kind of evolve and embrace, you know, what is relevant in 2020. And so there's kind of a cleansing of the category that was happening. But there's a flip side to that. You know, if you think about some of the service-centric businesses, like, I'll just give you some examples, some of my favorite tenants across our portfolio, you know, it's the maybe the less sexy stuff, but it's the day-to-day necessities, right? You know, where does the missus get her nails done? Where are you getting your hair cut? Where are you taking your dog to get groomed? Where do you take the kids to go to the dance studio? You know, we've got all sorts of service-centric tenants like that, that, you know, Amazon's not in the business of, that I'm aware of yet, to do some of those things. And so that's the tenant mix that I like, that I'm drawn towards. It feels, you know, internet resistant. It feels pandemic resistant. Like, I think for the foreseeable future, we're still going to go down to those neighborhood centers, those strip centers, and do some of those things. So I think a lot about that when I'm buying a building is, who's there today? Who am I going to put in there tomorrow that is still going to be very desired and in demand by, you know, the folks around that building?
Right, right. How much of what you own is grocery store anchored, if any?
One of my properties is anchored by an Albertsons. I don't own the Albertsons, but I do own all the shops around that.
Right.
And I like those deals. They're nice because they always drive tons of foot traffic, but so does everyone else. So I don't necessarily find the best deals with grocery anchored. I've had even more lucrative projects with, you know, stuff that was just kind of mismanaged, underperforming. You know, landlords haven't been willing to, you know, put a strong leasing team on there or help tenants with build out allowance, which is important, particularly in retail. So I'm not opposed to going outside of grocery anchored by any means. But I do think it's important to have fundamentally sound real estate, right? So you need the appropriate car count so that a Subway is going to be attracted to it. There's got to be good signage. There's got to be visibility. There's got to be good access in and out of a shopping center, or else people just can't get there. And that's why they're going there, right? To be able to pop in and out. We just did a deal in one of mine with a preschool. And so it's like, hey, 75, you know, parents a day are going to be coming in and out of that center now to drop and pick up their kids. So all the other tenants in the shopping center are going to benefit. And, you know, that's the type of stuff that I think a lot about now.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. You want to find those things that can't be delivered in an Amazon box. That's for sure. That's really interesting. What has happened with cap rates in your space?
So I live in Southern California, Huntington Beach specifically, and this is the land of the four caps or sub four caps in a lot of cases. And, you know, when you've got the cost of debt at like almost that same level, it's hard for me to get really excited about buying a four cap, especially sure. if it doesn't have a ton of value add upside. So that's kind of why I continue to focus on Arizona and Phoenix. I certainly get a better cap rate there than I would for the same deal here. And when I say better, I mean, you know, I could get a seven cap versus a four cap for probably the same asset. And then as you move from like a multifamily asset class to retail, like you said, kind of unpopular, makes the banks a little uneasy. Everyone's spooked by it. You know what? I can get a little better cap rate there too. And so, you know, between those two preferences that I've developed, I'm probably getting double the return that, you know, a Southern California apartment investor might be realizing. And that's in a relatively short-term period, you know. And for me, it's worth it to jump on an hour flight and spend a day or two there every other month to be able to stretch my money that much further, especially when I'm in, you know, asset accumulation mode. And, you know, that's, I think, resonating with my friends and colleagues who want to invest alongside us with deals. They say, look, we see that you've been able to deliver this result over and over and over again. So we would like to make a little bit more money. And as long as you're buying it right at a really good cost basis, and we can kind of deliver a better value product than what the surrounding properties can offer because we picked it up at a good price. And we've, you know, we're helping them out with tenant improvement allowance. We're paying our leasing brokers well. We'll fill up that building, right? There's enough things that we know how to do to get that filled up. And so that should deliver really good results for the folks who own these deals alongside us.
Right. No, absolutely. And that's one of the things that, you know, I love finding out of favor asset classes. You know, anything
like a contrarian move, right?
Oh, 100%. If everybody's going left, buddy, I'm looking right. And it sounds like you've done the same thing. It's like, you just look where everybody else is going. That'll tell you where to go the other way.
And you know, 100% agree. Like today, you know, that's retail has been working well for me. And because, you know, I've got a little bit of a resume and a track record built up and some momentum. I know the leasing brokers and I know the tenant reps and I know, you know, the vendors and the suppliers in that market for that asset class. It makes sense to double down because I'm getting looks at things that, you know, aren't possible for someone kind of from the outside without those embedded relationships. And then, you know, it just kind of snowballs from there, right? It's like an unfair, you know, competitive advantage because I got an inside track with some of these guys who've made hundreds of thousands of dollars in commissions working with me. And they're, you know, incentivized to do more deals with me because they know I'll pay them. They know I'll turn around and relist those properties with them. And so I think, you know, it would be silly for me to try and cover four different markets and four different asset classes because I just wouldn't get that same preferential treatment.
Right. Yeah. And then you're touching on another, I think, very important topic is just momentum. I mean, momentum begets more momentum, I think. And once you're moving in that direction, it just seems to kind of self-create. Now there's a perpetual motion machine, but in its own right, it kind of does. You know, getting that started is an interesting journey, I think, typically for most of us. And once it's going, it's great. You guys, one of the things I think I read about you was something to the effect of turnkey real estate, commercial real estate. Talk to us about that side of your business. I mean, we've kind of heard the buy and hold story, but what does turnkey commercial real estate look like?
My whole premise with turnkey was that I think you and me and many other active investors have gone through, you know, a decade of banging our head against the wall, learning curve, you know, lessons learned the hard way. We had to be the jack of all trades, master of none. And it's like, hey, I got to learn how to market. I got to learn how to raise money. I got to learn how to manage construction. I got to learn how to negotiate deals. I got to learn how to, you know, figure out what the hell all this terminology is in real estate and learn how to become a business owner and learn how to manage people. And I was like, this is the opposite of turnkey.
Right.
I think, you know, many of us want to get our money working as hard as we do. And I wanted to make it as easy as the stock market, right? Where you're kind of set it and forget it, like that Ronco rotisserie oven from back in the day. But you know, it's so easy to go buy Apple stock or buy Tesla stock, or should I say GameStop stock?
right?
You know, could we make it pretty much that easy for someone to invest in commercial real estate? And you could go buy a REIT, right? But the returns that I saw were pretty low compared to like what we're actually achieving on an actual commercial deal. And so this is a little bit of a hybrid between the two. Someone who invests, you know, alongside of us in a deal owns the real estate just like I do. They have their proportional share of the cash flow and the loan pay down and the rents that are going to bump up, which, you know, leads pretty much guaranteed to appreciation and the tax advantages. And so you get some things with actual ownership that you wouldn't in stocks and you wouldn't in REIT ownership. And if someone is passively investing alongside a sponsor, you know, really all they need to do is write the check or send the wire and take a close look at the monthly reports that come in, you know, trust their sponsor, you know, maybe do some good homework that they believe in the asset class, that they believe in the market, that they believe in the business plan. But from a day-to-day standpoint, you know, my friends and my family don't have to do jack. I try and isolate them completely from, you know, the hand-to-hand combat and the heavy lifting that exists from the active operation of the business. So it's like, man, if I can get you guys double-digit returns and you don't have to do a thing, I think that's a pretty interesting value proposition to most people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You don't have to do a thing other than read the reports and see the ACH in your account once a month.
Right.
Yeah. Where do I sign up again? Yeah. That's awesome. Sean, let's jump here into the final four if we can. I've loved this. So what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Don't do it alone. You know, there's so much we don't know. And then there's so much we don't know. And so much of my success has been because of the friends or even the family that have supported me, but probably more so the coaches and the mentors who've been willing to guide me and teach me and, you know, give me an inner look at their playbook. It's, you know, probably saved me hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in mistakes and opened up the opportunity to create that kind of wealth, you know, for our family, but also, you know, the people who are able to participate with us alongside those deals. And so, you know, I'm the biggest believer. I gobble up as many books as I can. I talk to awesome guys like you, Sam. I learn new things every day. I try and be a consummate student. You know, I'm in a couple different mastermind groups where, I'm trying to be the dumbest, brokest guy in the room, right?
Right.
And that's usually helping me to continue to level up over and over and over again. And we're always improving. And so that, you know, that saying that you've heard, your net worth is that of your network, right?
Right.
Couldn't agree more.
Right. No, that's awesome. I think you may have answered all four or three of my final four questions here in that answer, but we'll give you a second shot at it here. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Yeah. I mean, that would be it. I'm now trying to have great people help me with what they do best. Like, I'm not very good at many things. And so I try and do the one or two things that I am good at and then have absolute experts do what they're exceptional at. And there's a guy named Dan Sullivan who wrote a book called Who Not How. And so I'm a big fan of that. I think it's sitting on my shelf back there. And so, you know, that means I brought in third-party property management this year to oversee my whole portfolio. That means I've got a CPA and a bookkeeper doing what they do best. You know, I've got folks, you know, vendors that do their third-party reports and make sure that we're not running into environmental issues. And I learned so much from all those guys. And it's exciting to see, you know, 20 or 30 years of wisdom and expertise, you know, being implemented on deals and that we can learn from. And so that's making me better every single day and every week.
Right, right. No, absolutely. That's great. So that was Dan Sullivan that wrote that? Okay.
Yeah,
so
along with, I think, co-authored with Tucker Max, one of the New York Times best-selling authors.
Oh, cool. Is Dan Sullivan the strategic coach person?
Yeah, so okay. I'm in coach, and then I'm also in another commercial real estate mastermind group called Commercial Academy that's been extremely beneficial for me. It's, you know, I consider those guys some of my closest friends and my Jedi Council. You know, every time I have a deal, I have them poke holes in it.
That's awesome. What a great group, like you said, to have a deal and have somebody poke holes in it, because, man, we all suffer from confirmation bias, which is just like, oh, this is the best deal ever, man, especially for us deal junkies that just, I mean, we get a high off closing a deal. So, you know, it's deal junkies have to have somebody just be like, no, man, don't do it. So,
well, it's so hard to stay disciplined right now when you're seeing money at like an all-time low. Like, debt is cheaper than we've ever seen in my lifetime.
For sure.
That we ever will. And then, you know, I'm looking at like all these deals popping off and it's like, hey, I'm buying this deal. I'm like, man, I look at that and some of them are just razor thin margins and it doesn't leave much room for error. And if you stress test those deals even a little bit, you know, does the model break? And so, you know, I've stayed pretty disciplined through this whole thing. And, you know, I was hoping to buy a lot more last year, but I sat on the sidelines and, you know, didn't want to catch a falling knife. Right. And so I'm sitting here this year excited and starting to see more opportunities to get stuff that's, you know, it's taking a beating, but someone needs to go in there and solve some of those problems that you know, we're faced with on some of these buildings now.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what is one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
I'm kind of enjoying stuff like this with you, where I'm maybe helping the beginning investor be exposed to a world that they may not otherwise. I know I wasn't, you know, I didn't come from, you know, wealth, you know, I wasn't handed down a portfolio. I'm not a third generation, you know, commercial real estate landlord. And so, you know, if this message reaches one or two people who are excited about real estate and, you know, that piques their interest in commercial, I think that will make probably one of the biggest differences in their financial trajectory that I'm aware of. And so I'm putting a little bit more out there, right? If you go to my YouTube or my LinkedIn or my Instagram now, there's a little bit of the day in the life, a little bit of the behind the scenes, because I don't know how many people put that out there, especially when you reach a point of success. You're like, I don't need to do this, right? Like, I can just manage my deals, manage my portfolio. I don't need to kind of, you know, be vulnerable out to the world and show people all my flaws, but I'm doing a little bit more of that. I also love anything that's enablement, kind of like maybe you're familiar with Kiva, where, you know, you're donating money to someone who can then turn around and turn it into a business or plant seeds and make some. So that kind of stuff resonates with me. It's more of like a hand up versus a handout.
Right.
And I think, you know, people who can take the bull by the horns and go do something, that excites me.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. Sean, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Probably the best place is seancatona.com, because I've got links to all my social media profiles on there. My business, Simplified Properties, is up there too. And so, you know, if you want to learn, you know, just about my journey in real estate, that's largely on social media now. And then if someone's interested, particularly in shopping centers, you know, simplifiedproperties.com is where I house most of that.
That's awesome. And Sean Katona, that is spelled S-E-A-N-K-A-T-O-N-A, just in case you're listening and want to know how to spell Sean Katona. Sean, thanks for coming on today, man. This was awesome. I certainly appreciate it.
Blast, Sam. Thank you so much. And great to spend a few minutes with you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.